Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. On the program today, we hear an education report from John Russell. We also have stories from Jill Robbins, Anne Ball, and me. But first, here's Mario Ritter.
In South Korea, Moon Jae-in, who wants a softer approach to North Korea, has won the country's presidential election. Moon told supporters, "I will be president for all South Koreans." He declared victory after the two other major candidates conceded defeat. The East Asian nation has been sharply divided as former President Park Geun-hye faces a trial on corruption charges. Moon won about 41% of the vote. Hong Jun-pyo came in second with 23%, and An Chol-soo received 21%. In the South Korean election system, the candidate getting the most votes wins the presidency, even if it is not a majority. Moon will be sworn in on Wednesday as soon as the vote count becomes official. The U.S. State Department in Washington said it is looking forward to continuing close, constructive, deep cooperation with South Korea's new leader. Moon Jae-in is a former human rights lawyer. His parents fled North Korea during the Korean War. Moon lost in a close vote to Park in the 2012 presidential election. As a member of the National Assembly, he led the main opposition party during the presidency of Park Geun-hye. Moon gained popularity among supporters by proposing policies such as increasing government spending for jobs and education. However, conservative voters question his policies on North Korea and criticize him as being weak on national security. Moon has called for a two-track policy toward the North. He said he wants to support talks while at the same time continuing pressure on the North Korean government to change. Observers say his proposal is similar to the Sunshine policy of engagement started in the early 2000s by then-President Kim Dae-jung. Attempts to build trust between the two Koreas ended with North Korea's nuclear and missile tests early last year. South Korea answered with sanctions on the North and by closing the Kaesong Industrial Complex, the biggest economic link between the two sides. South Korea also has increased military exercises with the United States in an effort to pressure the North to stop its weapons program. During the presidential campaign, Moon criticized that policy, saying, "It resulted in faster nuclear and missile development by the North." On Tuesday, Moon said the next South Korean president should work with the U.S. and China diplomatically. The goal would be to return North Korea to negotiations to solve the nuclear issue, he said. Also, Moon will have to deal with the deployment of the U.S. THAAD missile defense system. U.S. President Donald Trump has said South Korea should pay some of the cost of the system, worth more than $1 billion. South Korea has said it already has met the conditions of the agreement. The presidential election was held months earlier than planned this year because former President Park Geun-hye was removed from office. Park has been caught up in a corruption scandal involving a longtime friend and millions of dollars in money from large Korean corporations. After the news was first reported, hundreds of thousands of South Koreans took part in protests last fall calling on her to resign. Park's removal from office hurt the country's main conservative political party. The party split into two groups, one opposed to Park and the other that supports her. Park is the daughter of former South Korean President Park Chung-hee. Many older voters continue to support the national defense policies of the conservative parties. One such voter, Lee Bong-ho, said this, "I've been supporting conservatives because I consider stability. Looking back at previous administrations, conservatives secured stability." I'm Mario Ritter.
Rights groups are worried about religious freedom in Indonesia after Jakarta's Christian governor was given a 2-year jail sentence for his comments about Islam. A 5-judge court ruled on Tuesday that Governor Basuki Cahaya Purnama was guilty of blasphemy against Islam. Blasphemy is defined as showing disrespect to God or to something considered holy. It is a crime in Indonesia, the world's 4th most populous nation. Government lawyers had proposed no prison time for the governor, but the judges rejected that suggestion. The governor, best known by the name Ahok, is an ethnic Chinese Christian. He lost in his effort to get reelected last month. He was leading in opinion studies of likely voters. But his popularity dropped when some Muslim religious leaders said Islam's holy book, the Quran, barred Muslims from voting for a non-Muslim. Ahok responded by using a verse in the Quran to argue that there is nothing stopping Muslims from voting for non-Muslim candidates. Ahok's statement was edited in a video, which appeared on social media. Some said the meaning of his statement was changed. But Ahok's critics likened his comments to blasphemy. That led to the criminal charges against him and Tuesday's guilty ruling. In announcing its decision, the 5-judge panel said Ahok was convincingly proven guilty of blasphemy. Supporters of the governor cried as the panel announced its decision. Members of conservative Islamic groups cheered the guilty finding. Ahok began serving his 2-year sentence immediately. He was taken to prison in East Jakarta. His supporters joined together outside the prison to demand his release. Ahok announced plans to appeal the ruling. Human rights groups called the court decision a major setback to the freedom of Indonesians. Charles Santiago is chair of the ASEAN Parliamentarians for Human Rights. In his words, the verdict is deeply disconcerting, not only for Indonesia, but for the entire ASEAN region. Indonesia was thought to be a regional leader in terms of democracy and openness, he said. Indonesian President Joko Widodo is a supporter of AHOC. He called on the Indonesian people to respect the court ruling, as well as AHOC's right to appeal the decision. AHOC lost last month's election for Jakarta governor to Anies Baswedan, a former minister of education and culture. The blasphemy charges against AHOC were a big issue in the election campaign. Anies is to take office in October. Until then, Jakarta's deputy governor is to serve as governor. Although 87% of Indonesians are Muslim, the constitution officially protects six religions, including Christianity. It gives no special protection to Islam. But Faleem Khan, Deputy Asia Director of Human Rights Watch, said Indonesia's blasphemy law has been used to attack members of non-Muslim religions. He said the court ruling and prison sentence given to the Jakarta governor is just the latest example. Khan said that the government has also attacked sexual and gender minorities through hateful words and discriminatory rules. On April 20th, United States Vice President Mike Pence visited Indonesian President Widodo in Jakarta. He said the two countries share many common values. As the second and third largest democracies in the world, our two countries share many common values, including freedom, the rule of law, human rights, and religious diversity, Pence said.
In a surprising move, a Chinese human rights lawyer has withdrawn earlier claims that he was tortured while in detention. Lawyer Xie Yang rejected the claims in a court appearance on Monday in the Chinese city of Changsha. He instead admitted guilt to subverting state power and creating disorder in the court. His statements were published on Chinese social media. Xie Yang has worked on some of China's most sensitive human rights cases over the years. He has long criticized the government and the country's legal system. Earlier this year, his lawyers reportedly said Xie told them he had been hit and kicked while in jail. Xie Yang has worked on some of China's most sensitive human rights cases over the years. He has long criticized the government and the country's legal system. Earlier this year, his lawyers reportedly said Xie told them he had been hit and kicked while in jail. Xie said his attackers threatened to leave him physically disabled. After the claims were published, 11 countries sent letters to China. They asked the government to investigate. Chinese officials say Xie's statements in court support their belief that his earlier claims of torture were fake news. Observers say officials may now think his open trial will lessen the attention the case has received, both within China and overseas. But experts say it is unlikely people will forget the case. For rights activists and lawyers, the trial still shows abuse of the legal system by Chinese officials and a lack of respect for the rule of law. She's statements in court have only raised more questions about his treatment and led to calls for his unconditional release. The United States says it remains deeply concerned about the case and Xie's well-being. The U.S. State Department said his statement to the court appeared to be given under duress. It called for his release and for the release of other lawyers being detained in China. Zhang Zhongshi is one of Xie's lawyers. Zhang says the trial harmed the rule of law in China. For such a long time, he was disconnected from society without being allowed to meet anyone from his family or given any legal assistance, Zhang said. The lawyer said the trial showed how Xie has completely lost his legal rights. Zhang met with Xie in November, more than a year after he was detained. In January, Xie wrote a letter and sealed it in wax. He wrote that if he ever admitted to a crime, that will not be the true expression of my mind. It may also be because I've been subjected to prolonged torture. His lawyer said he knew that Xie was tortured. Zhang said, I personally overheard him being tortured and saw with my own eyes where he had been hit in the head. Xie is one of more than 300 lawyers to be caught up in a nationwide campaign aimed at those helping dissidents and government critics. Most of the lawyers have been released, but 32 have been charged with crimes, and 7 are waiting for their trials to begin. For most of the past 2 years, Xie was not permitted to speak to his lawyers. The court appointed a lawyer to represent him at his court appearance on Monday. Xie's wife, Cheng Guizhou, fled the country and is now in the United States. She says her husband has not been permitted to speak to his lawyers since February. She says people in the detention center where her husband is being held say he is closely watched and controlled. She said he is barred from using money or speaking with other prisoners. If others speak with him, they will be punished, and if he speaks with others, Xie would be punished. He was also frequently beaten by death row inmates. And now, he has denied all of these facts, Chen told VOA. Isn't that strange? Chen said it may be a long time until she learns what happened to her husband. Xie's trial ended on Monday, but the Changsha Intermediate People's Court did not announce a ruling. Because of his admission in court, it is likely the court will find him guilty, but it is not known how long his sentence will be. I'm Jill Robbins.
Imagine you are trying to develop a skill that you want to remember and use for a long time. Perhaps you are learning a new language or complex information in a subject like physics or mathematics. What could you do to help you remember what you have learned? What is a good study method to help you reach your goals? One way is to use a method called spaced practice. This suggestion comes from Mary Pick. She is a specialist in cognitive science, the study of the mind and its processes. Pick works for Dart Neuroscience, a company with offices in San Diego, California. In today's education report, we explore the idea of spaced practice. If you are like many students, you might study quickly and try to memorize subject material just before a test. You might learn new words in one study session, but then never look at them again. You might feel like you have memorized the new words or terms, but when it comes time to use them, perhaps on a test, you cannot remember them. You will not be surprised to learn that practice, repeating exercises, helps you learn. However, the way you practice can influence how well you learn something. Cognitive scientist Mary Pick says that one way to develop a long-term memory of something is to use spaced practice. In other words, studying the new information over time is better for long-term learning. So, instead of practicing in only one session, learners could better spend their time studying the information several times throughout the week. Pick says that spacing comes in two ways: spacing within a study session and spacing between sessions. Spacing within a session means occasionally re-examining the information in a single practice session. One way English learners can do this, Pick says, is by creating flashcards. One side of a card might have the word in English, the other side has the word written in the student's native language. The more cards you have, the greater the space between each time you see the card. So, spacing within a session is used to describe the act of building a larger deck of flashcards. Pick asks, "How thick is your deck of flashcards?" The bigger the deck of flashcards you have, the better that is for long-term memory. Spacing between sessions is somewhat different, she notes.
You don't want to do all of your studying in one learning session. You want to space it across time. So, you know, maybe 3 days a week you come back to this deck of flashcards and you go until you get items correct.
If you do not like having large decks of flashcards, you can create digital tests or quizzes that follow your progress over time. We explored this subject in an earlier education story, which you can find on our website, voalearningenglish.com. Spaced practice naturally goes with another study method, interleaving. Interleaving means using a mix of study methods during a practice session. The important part is that your brain has to practice changing between different operations. Language learners may study different vocabulary words mixed together in a large deck of flashcards. The brain must remember different meanings of each word. Or students studying math may practice addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division problems mixed together. The important point, Pick explains, is that students begin to discriminate between different kinds of problems. This strategy is much more useful than having exercises only for addition problems or only for subtraction problems, for example. The strategy of practicing only one subject is called blocked practice. It is commonly used in schools, although Pick says that it is not as effective as spaced or interleaved practice. You should know one thing about the strategies we have discussed today. They take more time. Mary Pick and Henry Roediger III wrote an article for the Journal of Applied Research in Memory and Cognition. In the report, they write that some of the best types of learning take place slowly at first. This learning may take more time and be more difficult, but long-term retention is far greater. In other words, you will be able to remember what you learned for far longer. So, the important point is to not become discouraged. The value of regular, effortful practice may not be apparent for some time, but the long-term benefits are great. I'm John Russell.
Bison are large animals with big, heavy, brown fur. Also called buffalo, they are the largest mammals in North America. Bison once numbered in the millions. Since prehistoric times, they moved around from the Appalachian to the Rocky Mountains in the United States. They were down to only a few hundred animals by the late 1880s, according to the U.S. Department of the Interior. Now their numbers are growing. There are an estimated 500,000 bison living in North America. They are increasing in part because they are helping restore lands in the U.S. Fewer than 30,000 wild bison live in conservation herds, but in Indiana, bison are helping undo more than 100 years of environmental damage. Ted Anker is the program manager for the Northwest Indiana Nature Conservancy Program. Standing outside on a windy day, he spoke about the project.
By creating this large-scale restoration project, we've been able to harbor all those species that were just barely hanging on.
Anker says the 429-hectare reserve used to be the largest lake in Indiana. But in the 19th century, the water was removed and the land was used for agriculture. They cannot bring back the lake, but they can bring back the prairie or grass-covered areas. Bringing in bison helps both the animals and the land. Bison eat grasses.
And bison are a really easy way to get short grass prairie. They, just by living and doing what bison do, which is mostly eat grasses and make little bison, they create the short grass prairie for us.
For 20 years, the Indiana chapter of the Nature Conservancy has been working to bring back the prairie at Kankakee Sands Nature Reserve. Late last year, they took the last step. They brought in 23 bison, including 16 which were pregnant. The bison's work is not limited to grazing or eating the prairie grasses, but when they do, it allows wildflowers to grow. That provides habitats or housing for rare birds. The bison also roll around on the ground, which creates low areas. These fill up with rainwater and attract small animals. It is expected that the Kankakee Sands herd will grow to about 75 animals. Supporters say the land should go back to looking like it did when thousands of bison lived there long ago. I'm Ann Ball.
And that's all the time we have for the show today. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver.